Produced by PI Media. A $1 million business deal was about to take place.
The sender was a venture capital firm in Asia. The victim was a startup company in Israel.
The two parties were about to finalize the deal. What they didn't yet know was that somebody else was standing in the way. A hacker. Through some clever cyber trickery, the hacker effectively positioned themselves perfectly in between the two companies.
They initially fish somebody high up in the organization. They get in and do reconnaissance. They watch for a while. They understand how things operate in the environment. Then they register the one-off domains or the lookalike domains. So the threat actor was truly in the middle of the communications and able to manipulate them and forward them on.
Neither side knew they were being manipulated. So the Chinese firm entered the bank account destination for the seed money and initiated the transfer. They had no idea how grave a mistake they just made.
And when the venture company wanted to send the actual VC to the Israeli startup, the threat actor got that money.
The entire payment was gone. A $1 million fraud. Hi, I'm Ran Levy. Welcome back to CP Radio, the Checkpoint Research Podcast. Recently, Checkpoint's research division has investigated multiple high-value cases of hackers intercepting corporate money transfers. And when I say high value, I mean high value. In all, these cases have led to millions of dollars in losses. Think about that. Criminal hackers have been able to siphon hundreds of thousands of dollars from investment firms. This actually happened in real life.
That's so odd. How do they pull something like that off?
It's really hard with this one. Everything that the threat actor was manipulating seemed real and seemed like this is how our business operates. And you're getting to know our venture capital firm and this is how we're doing things.
For this episode, Nate Nelson, the writer of our podcast, sat down with a member of Checkpoint's research team to figure out how in the world a hacker can pull off a $1 million heist, why it's happened multiple times already, and why somewhere, sometime in the future, in all likelihood, it's going to happen again.
I'm Tim Otis. I'm the Global Operations Team Leader at Checkpoint here at the Incident Response Team.
Team Otis was on the front lines in the fight against two separate million-dollar fraud cases. The first involved the Chinese VC firm and the Israeli startup they were funding. Not two full weeks after publishing their report on that incident, Checkpoint's incident response team was contacted regarding an eerily similar case. Different hacker, different target, same story. It was the 16th of December 2019 when three private equity firms located in Israel and the UK came calling. They wanted to report a possible case of wire fraud. Over $1 million was on the line. At the heart of the case was a hacker. Nobody knew much about this hacker yet, so the team at Checkpoint decided to at least give them a name. They called them the Florentine Banker. If there's one thing you can say about the Florentine Banker, is that they're methodical. Each step of their plot was thoroughly planned and executed.
When they first find a target, they start by trying to fish high-level people in the organization. They're typically fishing for credentials. It's a credential harvesting phishing campaign, not as opposed to like a malware delivery phishing campaign. But these guys are after creds, and they want to get high-level people in the organization's credentials so that they can log into and read emails of these high-level people in the organization.
After spear phishing high access members of the target company, the next step is to use their powerful credentials to snoop around, getting a lay of the land, figuring out how the target typically operates.
They have phished somebody in the environment. They have visibility into that person's day-to-day activities through email, their meetings, their business transactions, the tasks they're assigning to their teams. And this recon allows them to get a great picture of the overall goings on in that corporation. It also allows them to fish further within the organization. Like, imagine your boss sends you an email with a link to click. The level of trust you have for the email coming from somebody you know is much higher than if it's a fish coming in the front door. So once in the recon phase, they're also spreading themselves by refishing, if you will, within the organization.
As much as it's a hack, it's also a spying operation. Like a good spy, the Florentine banker must learn their opponent, how they talk, how they operate, in order to one day use it against them. Only once they're fully accustomed to the target, as familiar with how they do business as an actual employee of the company would be, does the hacker begin to affect the target's systems. In this case, the Florentine banker prioritizes communications. Their goal? To position themselves as a kind of gatekeeper, controlling what they see and, crucially, what they don't.
Typically, threat actors get into to people's email and create rules that turn off or either delete or move to an unread folder that people never ever look at. Emails that have subjects that match, like failure, message failure, returned, invoice, and or if they're trying to fish from that account further within the org, anything that has to do with their phishing subject, they will also put a rule in that deletes it or moves it to some other folder or something. And through that, you know, while they're doing that, they're gaining even more leverage, looking more and more reconnaissance through this whole phase.
They don't know it yet, but at this point, the target has been effectively neutralized. Like in a spy movie, the hacker has located them, identified them, tracked them in their everyday life, learning their behaviors and patterns, then hidden them away. And what happens next? The hacker steps out, wearing a mask of the victim's face, impersonating them to a T. They do so by using what's called lookalike domains.
Lookalike domains are very dangerous these days. In today's fast-paced world, where we're moving really, really, really quick, from email to meetings and reading blog posts and then back to email and urgent things and all kinds of things popping, 7 different notifications at all times from different chat applications and everything, it's really, really easy to skim a domain name or a URL, the domain name portion of a URL, and say, what, you know, our mind, if we are skimming very quickly, can perceive that that 2 domains that aren't exactly the same do look the same. So this threat actor, a lookalike domain is basically one that fools the user into thinking it looks very, very much like the legit domain they were going to go to.
Lookalike domains are exactly what they sound like. Email domains that are designed to appear as if they belong to some entity, when in fact they're being operated by a malicious actor. An example of a lookalike domain might be, for example, ramlevy@gmail.com. Actually, that's not a great example. Most lookalike domains are subtler than that.
A couple different examples, like the classic one of registering a domain with a one instead of an I. For anything that has an I in it, you can register that same domain, but with a one. Other lookalike domains leverage the TLD of a domain, the top level. So instead of domainname.com, it could be domainname.io. And if that wasn't registered, the threat actor could register it. The name portion looks the same, only the TLD differs. And if I'm skimming, I might miss that. What these threat actors specifically did is they always liked to make the domains plural. So by adding an S to the domain, such as banking-service.com versus banking-services.com is how they like to do their, this threat actor likes to operate. And that's also that scenario where if I'm flying wicked fast through a bunch of email and everything, I might miss this little S, this one S on the domain name. And especially in an email thread that's established. If I'm talking to somebody via email and I've been emailing with them forever, and now I get another email from that same username at a domain that looks a lot alike but might have an S, it's really easy to get sucked into the flow of the email threads and just assume that this is the same domain.
By positioning themselves as the gatekeeper of their target's emails and setting up their own email to look nearly identical to the target's, the Florentine hacker is able to effectively impersonate the victim. And because they've spent so much time observing the victim, they know all the right things to say to sound the part, too. The identity fraud is so difficult to spot that nobody even raises an alarm.
I'll be honest, it sounds like the kind of thing that I would fall for even if I did notice the S. So I can see.
You and me both. Yeah, absolutely.
At this point, all the hard work is done. Stealing, I don't know, $1 million or so, is going to be the easiest part.
The two things that typically, these threat actors are no different than your typical business email compromise jerks, you know, that do this kind of thing. They do two kinds of things mostly. One, any email thread that's existing in the user's mailbox that has to do with wire transfers already. Maybe they're like a certain day of the month, they invoice all their business partners that owe them money. If the threat actor thereafter goes in and can send another email on that same thread and say, yes, I know we sent you the invoice for the account yesterday, but today we're changing bank accounts and please wire the funds to this new bank account number. The other way that these guys do, and we've seen before, is while they're doing recon and learning the environment and understanding who talks to who are the decision makers, who are the people who can, you know, execute financial transactions and have authority to do so. The threat actor does send a new invoice on into that environment. So they've done recon. They know who are the decision, the movers and shakers are. They can leverage that data, send a new invoice to their business partners out of the blue. So it's never existed before, but it might be, yeah, we need a new PO or here's a new invoice for the widgets that you're about to send us or whatever. And it was never discussed before, a brand new invoice. And alongside of that brand new invoice, they'll send their bank routing number for the payment.
In total, the Florentine hacker initiated 4 wire transfers from the joint bank account held by the 3 private equity funds they've hacked. The transfers added up to just under $1.4 million. When they realized what happened, the firms contacted the authorities and Checkpoint's incident response team.
What challenges did you face, if any, in gathering evidence for the case?
A number of things can be challenging for business email compromise cases. typically logs, log and log retention are the biggest thing where we lose the trail of the threat actor. If, especially if the threat actor's in the environment for a long time. So if you only have a few weeks or 1 month of logs, and the threat actor's been there for 4 months, their initial entry into the environment and some of the things they did when they first got there are gone. The other small challenges are kind of part and parcel with incident response investigations. Users get scared and delete emails, and that's evidence that we would have needed.
So you're telling me that the hacked parties themselves delete the emails out of a sort of fear instinct?
That can happen. That's happened several times before, where on the days that they find the financial things the fraudulent transaction happened, somebody goes through their email and may accidentally identify that one-off domain we were talking about, or a lookalike domain, and then they feel guilty. It's human nature to feel guilty, and in feeling guilty and kind of maybe depressed or trying to cover their tracks at the same time, they'll delete a lot of email, and that those might be the evidence that could really tie us to the one-off domains the threat actor used, or more importantly, often the bank routing numbers that the threat actors are using, so we can hand them off to law enforcement.
Ultimately, even with the help from law enforcement and cybersecurity experts, money transfers are a very difficult thing to reverse. An emergency intervention was initiated, but only about half of the money was recovered. The rest could not be. It's incredible to think just how much money was stolen. But really, the three private equity firms targeted in this story might even consider themselves lucky. Lucky that they got anything back. In the story we opened this episode with, about the Chinese VC firm and the Israeli startup, none of the money ended up being recovered. Two attacks, two hackers, same attack methodology. $700,000 and $1 million, respectively. All of that money is now gone forever into the hands of criminals.
So what would you have our listeners take away from these stories? How could people protect themselves from such attacks?
There's an open source way, and there are commercial products ways to watch and monitor for domains that are stood up that are lookalikes to your own domain. We recommend people do that. Take a look every month or every quarter at domains that have been stood up that might be lookalikes to you, not only for business email compromise and potential attacks that way, but also brand reputation. A lot of domain takedown requests that our team does on incident response team here at Checkpoint, a lot of the domain takedowns we do have also to do with brand reputation, where somebody's doing a very popular clothing apparel line -123 domain. It looks like the popular clothing line apparel's legit domain name, but it's not. And they're selling like, Bobo or one-off versions of that company's products. Another big step, I would say every enterprise should set a dollar threshold where if we're about to wire money that's larger than X, we should do a telephone phone call to the recipient and make sure that we have the right information to transfer that money. So just verifying wire transfers with phone calls, kind of a simple thing, but could have saved a lot of money. Education is a giant step that everyone kind of needs to take. Showing employees what lookalike domains are and the dangers therein is important. Showing employees how to hover over links and not click them and see that, like, maybe the link is not the same domain that the actual link is not the same domain that the text says. And these education things, the thing, even if you make a mistake, we all make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. It's okay, it's more important to share these with your incident response teams inside your, and your security teams inside your organization, than it is to delete that because you're scared. All of those things should come down to every single employee, no matter what role they are in the company, in my opinion.
The money stolen from these companies will never be recovered. But the more important part of the story, for the rest of us, is that these crimes did not occur in isolation. Checkpoint has found other cases just like these affecting other companies in other parts of the world. In fact, the Florentine banker may still be on the loose.
We have done some back-end investigation. Incident response team at Checkpoint, in conjunction with Checkpoint Research, have done some investigation on the domains, the one-off domains that were registered, using data, like pivoting on Whois data and other open source kind of data that we can just look at openly. We were able to find 39 other domains that were registered by this threat actor. And the other 39 domains are either past or potential future victims of a business email compromise attack.
You heard that? Past or potential future victims. Our podcast is coming to an end. But these man-in-the-middle business email communications hack, capable of causing millions of dollars in corporate losses, are not going to end anytime soon.
Wow. You know, I don't know if this is the right way to think about things, Tim, but when you tell me these stories, it just sounds like the best way to hack people these days. I mean, the amounts of money you could get for the input, it really doesn't seem like it's that much work to get millions and millions of dollars.
No, probably a few hours a day of watching email, a little bit of time to register a lookalike domain, and just kind of the brain power to keep everything organized and keep track of who are the players, and that's all you really need.
Okay, so before we give too many tips to hackers out there,
oh my goodness, yeah.
No, it's not your fault. I'm the one who's thinking maybe I should try this out sometime. I'm just kidding.
That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. For past episodes, visit Checkpoint's research blog at research.checkpoint.com, and you can follow Checkpoint Research on Twitter or follow me at RanLevy. That's RanLevi. CP Radio is produced by PI Media, written by Nate Nelson, produced by Guy B. Noon, and edited and narrated by me, RanLevy. See you again next episode. Bye-bye.